honest, guys, what I'm going to say next might not seem like such a surprise to you, that your wife needs to feel loved. Most of us have heard that. What, though, is the surprise is how easy it is for her not to feel loved. And this can happen even if your relationship is great. So what we found is that somewhere in a woman's mind is kind of this question that's always kind of there. It's not at the front part of her brain, but it's always there. And it's a question she's asking, am I lovable? Am I
special?
Am I beautiful? That question for who I am on the inside. And now you might think that, well, gosh, I married you. I told you that
I
love you. What happens, though, is that when a woman is married, and you may have a great relationship, your marriage might be solid, but because sometimes that question can get triggered, and it morphs when a woman is married, and it morphs into something like, is he happy he married me? Does he really love me? Would he choose me all over again? And again, this can be in the happiest marriages.
Do you want me to tell them why?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
One of the things that we found is actually that men and women tend, not always, but tend to have two different sets of insecurities running under the surface. And for you as guys, it's often sort of, am I able? Am I good at what I do? Do I measure up? Kind of, do I have what it takes?
Am I good at what I do on the outside? My performance.
Correct. And for her, what we found is that for most women, the question isn't, am I good at what I do? It's, am I lovable for who I am on the inside? And like Jeff said, that question doesn't go away just because you married her.
And you know, what's really odd is I have struggled with this because I don't really have a grid for it. For example, when I asked Shanti to marry me and she said yes, and we took our vows in front of a bunch of people, I kind of thought, at least in my case, that settled the question.
Done.
It's just the question of whether she loves me just didn't come up in my head. But for you,
not the case.
And for most women.
For most women, what we found is that for 82% of women on the survey, now again, it's not 100%, right? 18% do not have this question. But for 82% of the women, the issue is, you know, you walk down the aisle and you say your I do's, you move on. And for her, there is no switch in a woman's brain that gets flipped to the, oh, now I feel permanently loved position. And instead, she has that question, does he really love me? Because of that internal question. And that morphs in marriage, like Jeff said, to would he choose me all over again? And here's the key. She's asking herself that question every day, subconsciously, every day. And so she's looking for the answer to that question every day.
And to complicate things, there are events that all of us in a married relationship encounter certain things that cause that insecurity, whether the insecurity is in us or in them, to get triggered because of something that's occurred in our marriage, the way our spouses responded to us in a certain way.
We all do. I mean, when I do the talks for helping women understand men, which, by the way, we highly recommend you listen to and maybe talk to your wife about listening to. When we do that, we explain to the women that, you know, you men look so confident in yourself, and yet we women don't realize that there's a lot of self-doubt and a lot of vulnerability under the surface. It's just on that different thing. Am I good at what
exactly
I do? And so we women, that is in there, in your beautiful, confident-looking wife.
And so what happens is when we have one of these events in our marriage and that insecurity gets triggered, inside of your wife, oftentimes what's happening is she starts having this question arise in her heart and in her mind.
Yeah.
And she may actually, as a result of that, kind of behave in a way that is confusing to us guys. Like, we're going, what is this all about?
Why are you upset?
Because we don't have a grid for it, it's hard for us to empathize or understand what it feels like. So the fact of the matter is that insecurity, once triggered, will stay there until she feels reassured by you that you do indeed love her, that you would choose her all over again.
And we'll explain that in a minute.
That's we will.
What that looks like.
Yeah. So, well, actually, why don't we go right to
go
that to
it.
Help the
yep.
guys?
Yep.
So what does it look like? Let me give you a typical example in the Feldhahn household. So here we are. Let's say that it's some morning and Shanti and I are having our coffee, you know, in the kitchen, at the kitchen table. And, you know, the discussion that we're having isn't going so well.
Some emotions are running high,
I'm feeling the intensity of the feelings coming from Shanti and the ones that
are coming from me.
We are. And then I look at my watch and doggone it, I've got a client meeting. So I excuse myself from it and I get in my car, back down the driveway. And guys, what happens to that thought of that disagreement as I'm driving out of the neighborhood? If you're like me, and most guys have acknowledged this, that the thought kind of just goes away. Because now I'm in client mode. I'm in work mode. I have to prepare mentally for the day ahead. So the argument discussion is gone. And if I'm honest with myself, when I drive back in the evening, I'm kind of hoping that Shanti did the exact same thing and that she's forgotten about it. And has that happened?
No.
And when we ask this in a conference,
all the women say, shake their head and
not
say,
a chance.
No. But here's the reason why. Do you mind if I
explain
this? Okay. Here's the reason why. It isn't that she's holding a grudge. It's not that she's refusing to let something go or she's like being dramatic. None of those things. What's happened is that underground question, am I lovable? That in marriage is, does he really love me? That's now been triggered. I know it sounds so strange to you, but that really truly has been triggered. And it's risen up and it's kind of roiling in her gut. And it's this feeling like, are we okay? And that's actually a painful feeling. And that feeling is gonna circle, like Jeff said, until she's reassured.
Now, what we've found is that for us guys to be able to, what do we do about this sort of thing? It really helps if we can understand kind of where she's coming from.
Yeah.
And so when I was hearing this sort of stuff from the women as we were interviewing and working with a lot of them in focus groups and ultimately in the national survey, my surprise was how frequent and intense these feelings can be for a woman.
Yeah.
Because they just aren't there for us guys, at least not in this area. So is there something that I can say that me as a guy, and probably you as a guy, have something that is actually similar? And here's the question. If I were to pose to you, how many of you guys feel absolutely secure in your jobs, that you never really have to worry about career or how you're going to provide for your family? Frankly, most guys would say, well, of course not. I don't feel that way. And when we would ask people, men, in conferences for a show of hands, how many just don't ever think about that sort of stuff? Providing for their family just doesn't come up. And never did we have anyone raise their hand.
Except for one. We had one guy in a conference for like leaders and counselors and that kind of thing. And we were in the middle of Kansas. And there was 1,000 people in the room. Jeff asked that question. And this one guy in the front row, his hand shot up. And everybody went, oh, and it was a Catholic priest.
So, okay. So outside of that small little niche of Catholic priests, I think for the rest of us guys, as one guy described it to me, he said, look, you know, how can I feel ever secure in this area? I mean, the economy could go south. My company could lose some of its biggest clients. Or frankly, I mean, if I'm honest with myself, I could be 3 or 4 mistakes, serious mistakes away from being fired. And so I always have that thought of how I'm going to provide there in my mind. It's in the back. It's not always in the front, but it's there. When I was recounting what that guy said to a group of women in a focus group, one woman said, Yes, that is exactly how we feel about you and our relationship with you. We feel that we could be three or four of these arguments away from our relationship starting to kind of spiral down. Not that we're going to get divorced, but that things could go from a good place to a bad place. So therefore, we have to be regularly vigilant about these
things.
And
that's subconscious. I mean, it isn't that we're being regularly vigilant, like I'm on top of you, but it is a subconscious vigilance because of that very real insecurity under the surface.
So we've kind of talked about what can cause this insecurity, this question to kind of move from the back of our brain to the front. And what are these triggers? I think it'll be really helpful if I can kind of identify several of them for you all so that, you know, if you start observing behavior from your spouse that is somewhat confusing, kind of reverse engineer from where you're at and look and go, did one of these events occur? And is that what's causing this this issue where we're
this
at?
This issue.
Yeah. So I'm going to put up a screen with some of these triggers and then I'm going to explain them. So let me tell you what some of those triggers are. The first one we've kind of already alluded to and covered. It's conflict. It's probably the most obvious one. We all can kind of know what that kind of,
feels
the results
like.
Of that can be. The second one, which is Jeff's preferred way of handling almost all conflict with Shanti, is withdrawal. And, you know, that to me seems like I just got to clear my head. I need space. I need to get away.
Except what happens is as you're withdrawing, like as you're driving out of the neighborhood, for example.
Right.
What happens to that feeling of, are we okay? For your wife, it becomes even more so as you withdraw. Are we okay?
Yeah. And so I've had to learn that over time. And your wife might be the same way as Shanti. The third one may or may not have anything to do with your spouse, but it may be just that you're silent. You just aren't talking much. I tend to be more of an introvert than Shanti, so I love not talking. The problem is, as one woman described to us, when my husband is silent, it has to be about me.
That's in our brains sometimes, like so, if you're quiet.
And it could just be our sports team got trashed.
Right, but if we don't know,
we don't know. Another one, and this will be the one where we stop with, is that, quite frankly, she could just be exhausted. Her emotional bank account, which is kind of how we describe it, could be just that it's depleted. You know, life comes at her pretty hard, and she's just exhausted with kids and work and relationship stuff and friends.
And it just means that if that's the case, her threshold is lower. It just makes it easier for her to see concerns and worries where maybe in a different season she wouldn't have seen it that way.
Exactly. So yeah. I know for the guys out there, you're thinking, oh, okay, this is all good information, but really, you know, most guys tell me, just tell me what to do. If you'll tell me what to do, I'll execute. Just give me the roadmap, so to speak. Give me a business plan and I can execute on it. So that's what we're going to do from kind of here on out on this particular topic. The first thing that I would say is we're going to talk about what do you do when that kind of insecurity has been triggered? And then we're going to move to another solution, which is actually how to prevent that insecurity from arising, even in the first place. Even though some of those events or triggers may have occurred, she still doesn't have that insecurity triggered within her.
Which I will say, if you can learn that, I mean, that's gold.
That
the prevention
gold.
Rather than the cure.
The cure. So let's jump in on the cure. And on this one, I'm going to tell you, this one I am really, really confident on this cure. Not because anecdotally it's worked in our relationship, but because we actually tested this out on the survey of all the women.
Mm-hmm.
And so here is the scenario. Let's just say that it's Shanti and me arguing. We've got something, discussion going on, and I hate
discussion.
This. I hate this because she is so much faster and more nimble on her mental feet than I am. I tend to be a bit more of a plotter in my thinking.
Well,
it just takes me time. So what will happen is we'll be kind of hot and heavy in that discussion, and she'll look at me, because I'll start to clam up, and she'll look at me and say,
"What are you thinking about what I just said?"
And I'll go, I don't know what I'm thinking.
And of course, I'm like, how can you not know what you're thinking?
And the truth of the matter is, I actually don't know what I'm thinking. I know that I'm upset. I can feel the emotion roiling inside of me. But as far as to make the words come out of my mouth in an articulate way that describes what's going on inside of me, that is, in my case, impossible. And from what I've heard from a lot of guys, pretty impossible for a lot of you.
Can I explain where that comes from?
Yeah, please.
Just really briefly. One of the things that we tell women in our course for women, it's called Understanding Him, you know, which all of us women want that. One of the things that we do tell women from our research with men that might be helpful for you to know, in case this is true of you, so that you can tell your wife, is that the male and female brains tend to be wired a bit differently in this area, and that actually your wife's brain is probably wired to think things through during this argument by doing what she's doing, which is talking about it and talking it through. Whereas your brain, like most men, it's about 80-20, it's not 100%, is probably more wired to think things through underground. You have to actually do the internal chess match before you can talk about it. But your wife is so different, she doesn't understand when she says, "What are you thinking about what I just said?" She doesn't understand that you truly don't know what you're thinking until you have done that internal processing.
And in some of the studies that you've done on the neuroscience of this, and when the emotion kind of centers of our brain,
correct,
at least for us guys,
the limbic system gets involved.
When they've been triggered, how long do the neuroscientists say that sometimes it can take a man?
It depends on which study you look at, but often a signal that passes in sort of it's a surface way. This isn't a deep way, but in a woman's brain, it's a surface passing. It can pass instantaneously, and then it goes deeper and deeper and deeper over time. In the male brain, it's like one thing at a time and goes very deeply on that one thing. So that signal can take 7 to 12 hours to pass. When emotion is involved, which is what we always tell the women, like in the course for women about men, we say, you've seen this because you ask your husband at night, "What are you thinking?" And he can't say. And then the next morning at breakfast, he can talk about it. And so don't feel like there's something wrong with your ability to process.
I thought I was defective. Honestly, I thought I was defective that I couldn't keep up with her, particularly at times like this.
No, it's literally just that our brains are wired differently. And that requires grace from you to her because of her tendency to quickly process verbally, and then as she goes further, maybe I said that wrong.
So for us as guys, we need to have that time to figure things out. And so this is where we surveyed all the women, and we asked them, and we said, if your husband, in the middle of one of these arguments or disagreements, were to say something like this to you, "Honey, I'm angry right now and I need my space, but I want you to know we're okay." Because help us analyze what just happened there with you.
So what just happened when you say, "I'm angry and I need some space, but we're okay"? It's the starting of the withdrawal. But it's telling her this is not the beginning of those three or four arguments of things going south. It's the reassuring her, this is just an argument. I'll come back. We'll talk about it. I love you. Basically, all of that is encapsulated in the we're okay.
And now there is a caveat with this, guys. The women have said that at some point, he does have to come back and actually re-engage on this particular
topic.
Very
important, yes.
If I have to chase him down 3 days later, all that goodwill that he built up with me by saying, you know, he just needed some space, but reassuring me, it's lessened significantly. So you got to come back. But here's also a good side of that. One woman described it this way. She said, look, the very fact that my husband's willing to come back and reengage in a subject that was somewhat difficult matters way more to me than whatever it was we were arguing about in the first place.
And when we do marriage conferences, for example, and Jeff explains that concept, you see every woman in the audience nod because almost, again, it's not 100%, but for most women, that is what matters.
And so for us guys, one of the big things, because we're just wired differently, we have to realize that she may not be, and again, this is, you know, not 100%, but she may not be craving space when you're in the middle of that disagreement or that argument. What is she craving?
Well, actually, this is going to sound funny to men, because for you guys, I think when you're at odds with another man and the emotions are running high, I think kind of the honorable thing to do is to back off and give that space, right?
Sure.
Like it's just a thing that guys do. And realizing for most women, she doesn't need that. She needs a hug. And we were saying this in a marriage seminar conference at one point, and this one man yelled out from the audience and he said, "You mean hug the porcupine?" And all the guys were like, "Yeah." And all of the women in the audience said yes and started clapping, because what's going on is, I guess to you men, we women look kind of scary maybe in that moment, but honestly, men, understand that for most, now this is not 100% of women, but for most women, if you ask your wife and she confirms that she is like this, when you kind of, instead of backing away, if you will reach toward her to give her a hug, you'll see those quills, so to speak, you'll see them melt. And we always say this is something to ask your wife at some non-emotional time. But let me tell you, it is powerful if you can learn and try that in that moment. And then if she confirms, yeah, that's what I needed, hopefully that will help you be able to have the confidence to do it again.
Okay. So those were the things to do, kind of the cure. It's already been triggered. Exactly. How do we kind of fix what's occurred? But again, as I said, there is a better solution, which is more preventative. And I can sum all of that up, the preventative stuff, with one word, pursuit. And when I say that at a conference, I am met with blank stares from most guys like, can you unpack that a little? Because I have no idea where you're going with this. And I always kind of chuckle because I go, pursuit, it's, you guys already know what I mean by it. And in fact, you're actually experts at it. It's just whatever it was that you did to make her fall in love with you in the first place. What were the things that you did when you were dating?
And
describe what the guys in the audience look like then.
The guys all go, ugh. And we have, you know, because of course the guys are thinking, that was exhausting, you know?
I have a job now. We have kids. I've got a mortgage. How can I possibly do the things with her that I did while we were dating? That just seems like a bridge too far. So what is it that we're really asking them to do with pursuit?
So here's the thing, guys. And this is the important piece of the puzzle for you to kind of make a mental switch. For you, when you hear pursuit and what you did when you were dating, you're thinking like the things you arranged, like, you know, the candlelight dinner or the picnic in the park or whatever it was that was the romantic thing.
And back then, they were exhausting too, but there was kind of a goal or something out there.
Well, one guy said, look, I got married so I could stop doing those things. And so that was the goal in some cases. And here's the thing, guys. It's not that those things that you're arranging, it's not like those are bad. Those are good things, but that's not what we're talking about. When we're talking about pursuit, we're talking about sending her a message. Mm. And that was a message that you were sending her during those days, which is, I'm choosing you today. I care about you today. I want you today. And you can send her that same message today by reaching across and taking her hand when you're walking through a parking lot. That says, I would choose you all over again. Or you're sitting, you know, together at dinner with friends or at church or whatever, and you put your arm around her in church. That says, I'm so glad I married you. It's when you like text her in the middle of the day for no reason other than to say, gosh, this has been a really tough day. I can't wait to see you later. I love you so much. I promise you, she will screenshot that text message and save it because it says that thing of I love you today, right, that she is questioning.
So as Shanti and I were kind of learning all of this and working on the research, and actually I think at this time we were starting to write the chapter on this.
Yeah.
And it was one particular day that we were working through this, and I looked at her and I said, you know, it's around lunchtime. Why don't we run out and grab a sandwich down at that little sandwich shop down the road? And she said, great. So we did. And as we are driving there, we're having a good conversation and we're talking. And then I pull into the parking lot of this kind of little strip mall type little setting. And there's rows and rows of parked cars. So as we park in our spot and we exit out and we're walking down through the row of cars that where we were parked. And I was walking closest to the cars and Shanti was kind of walking out in the center of the row. And we were talking. And I noticed that there was another car that had just kind of pulled down our row and was heading our way. And so I walked over to Shanti, put my hand, you know, around her and kind of pulled her in. And then we walked into the little sandwich shop. The next day, we were in the middle of a focus group with a group of women. And we were talking about some of these things, the little things that men can do. And Shanti said, well, just yesterday, Jeff and I were going out to get something to eat for lunch. And as we were walking through the parking lot, he came over to me and put his hand in the small of my back, pulled me close to him, and then we walked into the shop. And of the 10 other women in the focus group, all of them went,
aww.
And this is universal. When we give this story at a conference, all the women in the audience do that same thing. And the focus group, I was there with one other guy because we were trying to sit there and represent all the men in the world.
Listening,
you
yes.
know, what is it that we're surprised by? And we were shocked. And we looked at each other and we couldn't believe it. That
there, like,
it had
really?
This kind of an impact.
Something so little.
So little. And guys, let me tell you, here's what was going through my mind yesterday when we were walking through that parking lot. I'm next to the car, Shanti's in the middle, and I'm going, she doesn't see that car. Huh. It's going to hit her. She's not moving. Okay. And I kind of hesitated for a moment, not because I wanted her to get mowed over by the oncoming car, but because if our positions had been switched and she was the one who came over to me and put her hand on my back and pulled me closer, I would have looked at her and went, I saw the car. I'm not going to get hit by it. She had none of that. In fact, she didn't even think of that. All she thought of was that I cared for her and that
it was a little thing that
choosing
showed,
me.
Yes, it was a little thing that showed your care for me. Which, guys, when we talk about pursuit and we talk about preventing that insecurity of does he really love me rising up, listen, these little things like the text message, the hand on the small of the back, whatever it is, it may seem so minor to you. It's not. These things send a signal that she needs to hear every day.
Well, it seems minor to us because if things were reversed, it might feel minor to us.
Correct.
So in our own brains, we're thinking what she needs is what I would need. And that's the whole point. She's not you. She was wired by a God who knew what he was doing very differently from you.
Yep. And just to reiterate, some of you are going, well, that's more me, right? Because again, this isn't 100%. We find on all of these topics and all of the surveys, by the way, about these insecurities and about what we need as a result, that we've done the surveys from age 15 to 75, and it's usually somewhere in the 75 to 85% range. But that isn't 100. The key is, again, ask your wife, the woman in your life. See what she says.
So let's jump into the next topic.
Let's jump into the next topic.